Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. Today we have a guest. Our guest today is Grady Enke. Grady is a former member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as LDS or Mormons. You might know that. So today, Grady have a story of his life and the life as his church. And he's no longer LDS, correct?
Correct. My names are on the records, but I haven't been in so long.
Okay, great. So welcome, Grady, to the show. I'm glad to have you here to tell your LDS story.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely. You're welcome. So tell us about who you are and what brings you joy.
So my name is Grady Enke. I'm, you know, who I am. I'm from North Carolina originally. I am gay. I'm homosexual. The things that bring me joy is music, working with livestock, horses and cattle, donkeys as well. Those are my favorite animals. I enjoy those things so much. And auto mechanics, I'm currently finishing up at my last trade school to become an auto technician and a diesel technician. You know, who am I? There's so many things that define who I am. A mechanic, a rancher, a musician. But I'm strong. I am strong-willed. I'm strong-minded. I think that's the best way I can summarize it, of who I am.
Nice.
You know, I am my own self.
Yeah, that's great. And when you're mentioning that you deal with animals is great because that's like all animals is part of nature because it's like outside of us. So therefore, like interacting with another being that's not human or interacting with nature and where you are, I guess it's what would we call rural?
Yeah, definitely rural. Right now, right now I'm in the middle of Houston, Texas, and it is nothing but city here. But for the last, 2013. So the last, I think, about eight years, I have been in the countryside of Oklahoma.
Nice.
That's where we do all the cattle work, horse work, everything like that. So.
Wow, that must be fun. That means you probably have seen the skies in the Milky Way.
Yes.
And many of us are not blessed with that picturesque thing. So.
Right.
As you know, the premise of this podcast, so tell us, what is your shame, what is your guilt, and what is your fear, and how have you got rid of those things, or how are you working on getting rid of your shame, fear, and guilt?
Yeah. You know, my biggest guilt is, so I guess with my shame, you know, I'm not ashamed because I consider myself Christian and basically someone who just believes in Christ and believes in God and has a relationship with him. So I've always considered myself Christian. I think the shame part for me is, you know, what church I'm affiliated with, because in the Mormon church, you feel a lot of shame when you don't fit in. My guilt has always been because I'm gay. And that guilt has brought on that shame of being a member of the church and being part of the Mormon culture. Homosexuality is very frowned upon by a lot of Christian denominations, but especially the Mormon church. And so those two together have kind of just built up for years and years. I'm 30 years old, and I'm just now starting to come out to members of my family and very close friends of mine. And that's been my biggest fear for years. My biggest fear is, can I even come out to anybody about this? Can I trust anyone without being cast away, without, you know, being shunned or anything like that, considered the outcast of the family or the group? So, I mean, those definitely have horrored down on me my entire life. Most especially when I started to turn 12, when I turned 12 and you start to get into youth programs, you know, that's when it really starts to hit hard for me anyway. That's when it really started to hit hard. And that's definitely been my fear. And then you had said the overcoming it, right? I think the biggest thing that has helped me overcome. I stopped going and attending church back in 2014. I've gone here and there sporadically. I'm a pianist and an organist. I'm a music chorister. And if my grandmother needed help with any one of those roles being filled on a Sunday, I would have no problem going, hey, yeah, I'll go play. Or, yeah, you need a chorister, I'll go and conduct the music. And I absolutely love doing it, too. I think the biggest thing that has helped me to overcome my fear, my shame, and be guilty of who I am is honestly stepping back and stepping away from church. I think honestly, that's the biggest thing. And a lot of people are like, well, you can't step away from God. However, that may be true, but when you step away, for me anyway, in my opinion, when you step away from a church, doesn't matter which one it is, you're stepping away from the physical aspect of religion, but that doesn't mean you're stepping away from God in a spiritual aspect. You can always have a relationship with God, with Christ, and still be Christian, you know? And I think stepping away from physically being in church, being around people who, unfortunately, a majority of whom pass judgment on people who are members of the LGBT community, they pass judgment on people who are of different races or different creeds, even people of other religions. And so being away from that negativity, that was the biggest thing. I started to surround myself with people who are members of my community, members who are the LGBT plus community, and started to make friends with them and start to see how they learned, how they overcame their struggles. I have always admired people who come out of the, you know, in the term come out of the closet as a young child or as a young youth or even a young adult. I admire them and I look up to them because I'm like, man, you're braver than I am. How can you be so brave? And every one of them, like, it's definitely not being brave. It's just having a little bit of courage. And there's always going to be people that are mean, but stepping away from all that, putting myself in my own community, learning from them, talking with them, and relying on them for help, that's been the biggest thing. That's helped me overcome everything.
So. When you mention in the word brave, I remember seeing a meme that sometimes last year, a lot of Black women were making memes or videos. They were saying, I'm tired being brave. I'm tired being the strong Black woman. Can I just be a woman? And right. And I can feel their pain. It's like, yeah, you're strong. Yeah, you're brave. Yes, you're overcoming all this stuff. But they're like, can I just be a human being that can live my life without having to overcome shit? You know, right. Like, can you yes. just be Can you just be Grady and part of your sexuality is part of you, but doesn't have to define you as a being, and doesn't right. have to make you a sinful person that's being judged on and being yeah. guilty and shame? Can you just be Grady without being brave of like coming out? You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's good because it's like, what's that word called? It's like, can't think of the word right now. It's like, it's good for you because you're growing and it's part of growth and you overcoming things and then you get new perspective. But at the same time, it's like, couldn't society just live and let live?
Yeah, can we not coexist peacefully here and just, I guess, agree to disagree and let life go as it is?
Certainly. Especially, you know, if it's none of your business, you know?
Yeah. In the mechanic field, I've only ever seen, I'm going to call it testosterone level issues. You know, people are like, I'm better than you. I'm better than... And, I've only ever seen that in three major areas, and that's the military, that's in mechanics, and quite frankly, the church. You know, everyone is just, oh, I know more, and I've done this more. And it's like, I get it, you've done it more, but mm-hmm. you've got the experience, but you haven't fully learned the lesson just yet. Can I not help you? You know?
Right. And yeah, that's totally ego will make them fall, because we can never know. We can, of course, just like you know so many things that I don't know. I know so many things that you don't know. Does that make each other better than each other? No, it's really dumb to think that way of like, it's just, and especially if you at a church, you should know that if they read the Bible, probably not, that if you're a Pharisee and you have ego and you're walking around like your chest is pumped, then based on the Bible and their stories, God looked down on you, you know? So right. therefore, why do that? They don't even follow their own things, which is weird by me. So in another point you mentioned about spirituality, I love how you separate a cult or religion dogma with spirituality, because you can have relationship with Jesus or God without the religion. However, a leading question, because the Mormons, like everyone else, I was raised Jehovah's Witness, and they all say that they are the true religion. Right. And the Mormons definitely, they said, we know we're true religion because of da da da, and you know the reasons. And so therefore, to them, you cannot have a relationship with God without them, which is like pretty insane to think about, but you know. So tell the audience, how are you having relationship with God or Jesus Christ without being in the Mormon religion anymore? Or have you got rid of the Mormon teaching of about that?
You know, for me, it's a little strange. Some people call it unorthodox. And for me, the way that I have a relationship with God and with Christ is very different than a lot of people. So I do pray a lot. Now, yes, I do pray, I guess, like the Mormons pray. You know, you begin with Dear Heavenly Father and you end in the name of Jesus Christ. I've come to learn that when I was, anyway, that's a whole other story. But for me, I do keep part of that. I keep the scripture study up where I study the Bible, the Old and New Testament. You know, it's not all the time, but it is off. There are times I do start to read the Bible. But the biggest thing for me is my communication with my Creator, with God, is when I'm working on vehicles or I'm working with the cattle. Or any form of livestock. And the way that works is that's my personal time with God. I'll just give you a quick example. When I was working with my uncle and my aunt's herd last winter, we had a big deep freeze in northeastern Oklahoma. All of our ponds froze over, everything was just frost and ice. That's all it was. But we had to take care of the herds and, you know, single degree weather, you know, 8-9 degrees outside while it was snowing on us, and working with the herd, trying to get the calves nurtured, trying to get them warm, trying to make sure the mothers who were expecting, keep them warm, keep them healthy. It was like God was speaking to me and saying, hey, you're taking care of your herd. You need to make sure you're taking care of yourself. You got to physically stay warm. You got to make sure that you're feeding yourself healthy, you know, stop eating all this fast food, because I was eating a lot of fast food. And but it also was a little personal lesson of, hey, you know how to take care of your herd. You know, if you're taking care of your herd, maybe now you can go and take care of your personal life. And it was like me and God just spent that whole next several hours out in the middle of 9-degree weather, just talking it up, you know. And it was just that personal one-on-one conversation, as if I was having a conversation with my mom or my dad, you know. It was amazing. And it happens then when I'm working on cars too. You know, like, what is going on with this vehicle? Why is this engine not starting? And so now I have to go in and diagnose several different systems that could be causing an engine not to start and turn over. And it's like, you know, that happened the other day, and I was doing that. And then it was like, I could hear God's talking to me in a way, saying, hey, you've got, you know, because I've got eczema on my arms, like, hey, you've got eczema, maybe you should diagnose what's going on there. So, okay, go to a doctor. You know, and it's just little things like that. When I play the organ or I play the piano, that's my communication with God. That's my communication with Christ. I get to have that little personal time with them in those areas. It's much different than everybody else, but it's how I do it. So
that's wonderful. And I do feel like it's definitely the one of few or many ways, correct ways to do it, because most people that I know of, they just have that thing with God only mostly two times. When they're having a bad time in their life, that's when they turn to God, or on Sundays.
Yeah.
But you having it all the time, because as they say, God is everywhere, God is always with you. And then you see the littlest things, you know, as the Bible said, when you're faithful in small things, you'll be faithful in big things. So you being faithful in the small things of like nature, or dealing with another animal, another being, and doing things like work. And so you having that relationship with God. And I've noticed, I've talked to, again, being raised as witness, I've talked to so many people who are religious. It's all about going to church on Sundays, and every other day of the week, you wouldn't even call them Christians.
Right.
But yeah, so tell us about your childhood.
Just like in the church, or
you were raised Mormon, right?
Right.
Yeah. So like, yeah, the whole thing from being raised and like in the church, or outside of like having friends with people outside of the church, and falling off as a Mormon. I asked that question because I was also grew up Jehovah's Witness. I was raised in there, but I was not allowed to have friends outside of the church. Right. And I also, it's not part of the rule, but it also, I was not allowed to have friends within, like a lot of friends within. Oh. And I've spoken to a lot of missionaries on Facebook as of last year and this year, that they tell me they are allowed to have friends outside of the church. So it's like, they have a lot of similarities, but differences. So that's why I asked that question.
Yeah. So it's definitely different. I think it all depends on, I guess, each family. Now, my parents are wonderful parents. They are the best parents. I couldn't ask for any better. You know, growing up, it was like different. Now, my siblings, they had friends all the time. I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. I had a few friends within the church. And I think it's because we truly, genuinely, we got along. because we had similar interests. You know, we weren't into video games. We weren't into some things that everybody else was into. You know, we wanted to go out and have adventures, be outside, go camping, do all this fun stuff. We wanted to live our childhood the best we could. You know, so within the church, when you're growing up, up until you turn 12, you're in what's called primary. And, you know, when you turn 4 years old, you go into primary and you're there until you turn 12 years old. And in primary, you know, you have used to, we had 3 hours of church. First hour was sacrament. It was where everybody was in the chapel together. Second hour was Sunday school. So if you were in primary, we would go have Sunday school with our teacher and our classmates and our age group, whether that was 4 to 6, 6 to 8, and then 9 to 11. And you had your teacher. And then the third hour, if you were in primary, you went with all the other primary kids, 4 to 11, and you did singing time. You had a lesson. Sometimes we watch a church cartoon movie. So that was primary. And you're taught the basic things of the Latter-day Saint Church and the doctrine and everything. When you turn 12, the young women, the ladies 12 to 18, they go to a class for young women. The young men, we have what's called young men's. We have our class 12 to 18. The young women are taught how to dress modestly. The young men are too, don't get me wrong. excuse me. They focus more highly on modesty for the young women than they do the young men. I've never understood that. Like, I get it. There are a lot more ways for women to dress improperly. I understand that. But, you know, they're taught how to be mothers, how to be wives and everything. The young men are taught how to be fathers, how to be good husbands, how to be good sons, how to hold what is known as the priesthood within the church, that only the men can hold. They're very strict on that. Growing up in the youth program, I was not a big fan of it. Now, I did the Boy Scout program when I'm an Eagle Scout. I did what's called Duty to God within the young men's program. And that's where you complete, you know, certain tasks like a Boy Scout. You know, you have all these merit badges that you have to complete. The Duty God is similar. You complete all these, we'll just call them merit badges, and you get each one signed off, and you get a coin, a gold coin that says, oh, Duty to God award, you know, and that's all it is a little award showing that you're a good person, basically. I wasn't fond of it, though, even though I did all that, because the youth in the Mormon church, it varies everywhere you go, but they are some of the most critical youth I have ever seen in my entire life, because the youth expect each other, oh, your dad's the bishop, you're not supposed to be having these kinds of friends or watch these kind of movies. The bishop is like a priest. And, oh, you're not supposed to be talking like this, or you shouldn't make a joke like that, or your hair should be a certain length. Oh, you're 16 and you've got a mustache, but your dad's the bishop, or your dad's in the bishopric, or whatever, you know. Very, depending on where you live, that most definitely happens. I didn't face that a whole lot. However, I didn't fit in with a lot of the youth because I'm not a video gamer. I'm also not somebody who, I'm not a kiss ass. I don't suck up to people. And when I see something that's not right, I say it. And I saw a lot of things as a youth, like, hey, this isn't right. Like, what the heck? And, you know, the other youth were like, oh, no, just don't worry about it. It is what it is. And I'm like, no, it's not what it is. And so on and so forth. As a youth, I tried to have friends outside of school or outside of church, excuse me. And my friends were definitely not your Mormon approved friends. You know, some of them drank, teenagers drank, it happens, it is what it is. And Some of them drank, some of them smoked. You know, I didn't drink or smoke as a youth. Now, okay, granted, yes, I actually did smoke a few cigarettes here and there, but nobody's perfect. But it's like I had to keep my friendships that I had in school. It's like I had to keep that secretive to myself. You know, I couldn't go and talk about having friends who were female because my mom would get very upset. Like, why do you have friends who are female? Like, no, you know, my freshman year that happened and that kind of hit me hard. And I'm like, well, I'm allowed to have friends who are female. Like, why can't I have friends who are, well, you know, your older brother, this and that, you know, all he wanted to do was date and date and do this and do that. And I'm like, okay, I have no interest in any of that, honestly. So a lot of my friends that I had in high school, I never told anyone about, you know, when I come home and, hey, how was your day at school? Ah, it was okay. And that was it. Because I learned early on in high school that if I went, oh yeah, me and my friends, we were hanging out during lunch or after school, and we were talking about this on the bus, and we were talking about that during second period or home class or room or whatever. And it's like, why are you talking about that kind of stuff? Why are you making jokes like that? And it wasn't anything inappropriate. It was just light humor things that were, that's not very appropriate or Christ-like. And I'm like, okay, it's a joke, you know, things like that.
Can't live.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't get along with a lot of the other young men in my unit, my church, in my ward. It's called a ward, just in my congregation. Mm-hmm. A lot of it had to do because of my glasses. A lot of it had to do because education-wise, I was very set back. I was brain injured as an infant, so I had a lot of setbacks. I didn't fit in because I was trying my hardest to be what everyone expected me to be. You know, you're the bishop's son. You have to be in church. You have to read your scriptures. You have to go out and do this and do that. And so I was trying to be what I was expected to be. So I didn't make many friends in the congregation that way. I didn't fit in because I didn't speak their lingo. I didn't speak video games. I didn't speak sports. I was picked on a lot in my ward by other young men. And the only people I got along with in my congregation were the young women. And that was about it. And some of the older people in the ward who I have considered to be, you know, like grandmas or like grandpas, you know, because they're so kind and they're so loving towards me. You know, my friends in the church, they live an hour away from me. And, you know, those were my friends. They all lived an hour away. And the only times I got to hang out with them was on camping trips. And if I was able to talk my mom into letting me go hang out with them over the summer, you know, one summer, I didn't want to be home. I wanted to be with my friends because what kid wants to sit at home bored all day playing up in his room? Because, you know, you can't do anything without, you know, getting lectured about why I'm not doing this or doing that in the church, you know? So it was definitely hard. It's hard to fit in, especially as a young man. When I knew I was gay, I knew I didn't fit in with everybody. And I could never talk to anybody about it because, you know, back in the early 2000s, you know, people were very, very harsh on the LGBTQ community. Now, granted, we didn't have it as bad as they did back in the 70s, the 80s, the 60s, you know, but we still had it bad. But I knew I couldn't make friends with any of the young men because, you know, I couldn't be myself around them. I was able to be myself around them women because there's times where I can be very flamboyant. And the young women, they didn't care. They're like, be yourself, you know? I just wasn't able to be myself around the people in my congregation. So it was a very big struggle, to say the least. not fitting in. So yeah.
Do you feel lonely?
Growing up, absolutely. I definitely felt lonely. When I graduated high school, everyone expected me to go on a church mission. You know, the Mormons have their missionaries. And the expectation is a young man, when he turns 18, he starts his paperwork and he goes on a mission and he does it for 2 years. But I didn't go when I was 18. I actually didn't leave until I was almost 20 years old, I think. I think I was 20 years old. Let's see, 2011 is when I went. So yeah, 20 years old. And then I left for the Missionary Training Center just a couple weeks after my birthday. Definitely felt lonely my entire youth, 12, all the way through 18. I was lonely on my mission. You know, I went on a mission because at the time I honestly thought, and I had felt like this is true. And I honestly felt like, okay, this is a good thing to do. But immediately the MTC was great. But once I got into the mission field, I was over in Southern France. Once I got into the mission field, I absolutely was lonely again. And the way that I saw things being done, how missionaries did their work, I was not at all impressed. And seeing how some of the missionaries treated people they were teaching who were homosexual, seeing how they treated those people, I was so upset and I was not impressed. It stressed me out so bad that I ended up leaving France and going home. And, you know, going home from an LDS mission is the biggest downfall that anyone will look at you for. And they will pass the biggest amount of judgment. Because if you're coming home early from a mission and it's not something medically related, they're automatically quick to judge and going, oh, they had sex with somebody, or, oh, they went drinking or did these kind of drugs, or they just don't have a testimony anymore. And rumors go flying and words get spoken that cannot be undone, unfortunately. My anxiety was so bad that it did cause problems with my back. But when I got home, it was like everything went away. I was fine. You know, the chiropractor said, hey, we've got a treatment, but everything's fine. Like the muscles are going, they're calming down. They're going back to normal. You know, they sent me back on a mission. I said, look, I'll give it another try. And I had a private interview with one of the leaders. And we talked about what happened in France. But I told him, I said, look, I'll give it another try. I said, but the minute that I start to see what I saw over there, I said, I'm done and I'm coming home, because I'm not going to be out here teaching something for a church when the people that I'm supposed to be teaching with are doing this and pushing it on people and being judgmental and mistreating people and telling them that they're not welcome because they're homosexual or because they've been drinking in the past or they used to smoke. You know, I'm not going to be doing that if that's going to be the attitude. And I stuck it out a little while. I was in San Diego for a long time doing that. And one of the missionaries that I was working with, he began to be that person. And I just decided I'm done doing this. The missionary I was working with, he was very disrespectful and rude because another missionary, a young man, he was only 20 years old, a year younger than me at the time. He confided in a few of us that he was gay, and I confided in him that I was gay, and we both got along great. We didn't have feelings for each other. We didn't have feelings for anybody else. We just, that's who we were. But it didn't mean that we didn't believe in the church. It didn't mean that we didn't have a relationship with Christ and with God. But this elder began to speak out against him and speak some really cruel, harsh words to him. And that spoke to me. And I said, I'm done. You know, so there was loneliness all the way throughout. And when I got off my mission, stopped going to church, definitely felt lonely. And I think the only times I haven't felt lonely is when I have been with people who are either in the LGBTQ community or people who are supportive of that community. And I've made some really good friends along the way. And I can count how many friends I have on both my hands that are supportive of me outside of my family. And that's all I need. And I'm not lonely anymore. And that's just up until this last 2 years that I've learned to realize I've got some good friends and I'm not lonely anymore. So, well, yeah, sorry. I know that was a little bit much, but yeah.
Well, that was great details because I've interviewed a couple people. I've had hard times interviewing current Mormons, which I would love to interview, because mm-hmm. I've noticed one thing. Anyone who has been Mormon or is Mormon, they're very loyal, even when right. they're out. I've spoken to this guy. He wrote me a whole thing like you went through, and we made a date, and then he totally canceled the day of because he's like, oh, I can't do this. And I get it. Like when people say they can't, I don't argue with them. I'm like, well, okay, thank you, and let me know, whatever. Yeah. And I just respect it. And I've noticed a pattern how a lot of Mormons are very loyal even when they have left. And can you relate or tell me where that loyalty is coming from? Like, or have you thought about that, about yourself?
I think I can understand where that would be coming from. You know, a lot of people, and excuse me, you know, a lot of people have loyalty to the church because to them, the church has been a great help, whether that's spiritually, emotionally, temporally or physically. It's helped people get over addictions to drugs, alcohol, pornography, whatever it is. It's helped them with their marriage. They leave the church years later for one reason or the other. It doesn't matter what it is. But they still feel that loyalty because they feel like they might be backlashing or trash talking. And I can understand where they're coming from, but I've also talked to others who are in my situation, and we've actually got a small group of us out here together that I've created here in Houston. And, you know, we talk openly about it. And it's not that we're bashing, it's that we're trying to overcome something that has been a little bit traumatic for us and a little bit extremely hurtful to our personality, our feelings. It has put scars on us. And it's not that we're trying to backlash or trash talk, it's that we are trying to let others know, like, hey, I'm suffering with this. And, you know, there's other people that are suffering too. And we want them to know, like, we're here to help you. You're not alone. You know, there's others that have been through this and we've got your back 100% of the way. And I think people who back out at the last minute, you know, I cast no judgment on them. I understand where they're coming from. But a lot of them also have the fear that when they go public about it, the backlash they'll get from their family, who may be very stronghold Mormons, very stronghold in the church. You know, I have family who are very stronghold in the church, and I pass no judgment on them, none whatsoever. I have family members who have been in the church but no longer are, and I love them to death just as equally. You know, but I don't fear that backlash anymore. I'm just like, you know what? If you guys listen to this, then you listen to it. That's your own choice. You know, but everything comes from the heart. And I think sometimes some people might worry that perhaps they might get a little too emotional or a little bit too hurtful to others. And it's not that we're trying to be hurtful, it's that we're just trying to talk about our life, you know? Right. So I can understand that loyalty, but there's also comes a time when you can still be loyal, but you can openly talk about things, you know? So, yeah.
Certainly. So what is your relationship with the church now, if any?
So I have a little bit of relationship with it. I'm not a terribly big one. You know, I go because I'm a pianist and I'm an organist. And a friend of mine will message me and say, hey, can you play the organ or the piano this time? And I'll say, absolutely. And I'll go because right now, I have turned into where I am more spiritual than anything. I don't need to go sit in a building and have someone tell me how to worship Christ and how to become like him. I learned that from the Bible, and I learned that from watching other people and learning from them. My relationship with the church is very thin. While I respect everything that they're doing, I respect their teachings. I respect them individually. I just prefer to have a distant relationship because I feel that a lot of the teachings that occur when it comes to how people live, I think, is what causes a lot of the church to be judgmental and to be very blatantly rude to other people. You know, I think they, in all respect to the church, they teach to be Christ-like, yet they set that aside when it comes to matters of sexuality, of lifestyles and choices that people make. And they go straight to, honestly, casting the first stone when they live in a glass house, you know. It's my relationship is very thin. I respect them, but that's about it, honestly. So
when you used to be a missionary, so did you quit again the second time or did you finish it finally?
No, I honestly quit. Okay. You know, I don't believe in giving up on things, especially when they're hard. You know, my grandpa was a Marine and he always said we can do hard things. And I believe that. And it was hard. But I decided to leave and quit because it wasn't that it was hard. It was that there was something not right about the way the work was being done.
So what was that? Can you say it?
Yeah. You know, and I've taught this to youth before in the church after my mission. Even when I was not active in the church, I would tell the youth, I have several friends of mine that their younger siblings have come to me and said, man, I want to serve a mission, but I don't know how to do it. And the one that I talk to all the time, he doesn't want to serve a mission. I told him, I said, don't feel bad. Because 90%, if we put it into 100 percentile range, 90% of people who go on missions, especially the young men, they do it because it's expected. They do it because mom and dad said so, or because that's the only way that their girlfriend will marry them. I began to realize quickly, especially in San Diego, that missionaries didn't have what's a testimony, something that you believe in. I began to quickly realize that they weren't teaching from the heart. You know, Christ in the New Testament, he taught from his heart. He taught from the soul. He prayed to Heavenly Father, to God, and then turned around and gave those teachings to the people. Missionaries teach from books. well, we should teach from scripture and everything. I do believe that. It's as if they were quoting a script. You know, we have a book called Preach My Gospel, and there is a lot of good things in there. However, it's not meant to be taught out of, you know, like a teacher in a classroom. A teacher is going to teach me how to work on an engine, how to tear it apart, how it works, how to rebuild it. And when we take it to the machine and hook it up, we can turn that on and the engine should run. And he's going to teach us everything directly from the book and from experience. And that's how we're going to learn in the automotive field. When it comes to religion, you cannot teach from a script. While it's good to understand how to teach somebody the what Mormons call the plan of salvation, where we were before here, where we're going to go after life, while it's good to remember how to teach it, it's even better to actually believe it and teach it from the heart and help people understand it. I noticed that all they were doing was reading a little pamphlet, memorizing what it was saying, and then just rambling off things they had memorized. And when somebody that we were teaching asked a question that had nothing to do with what they had memorized, they couldn't answer it. And they would just say, well, I don't know the answer to that. That's not really necessary for us to know. And me being, I'm kind of a blunt person. One situation we were talking about, and the lady asked us, what do Mormons believe about the afterlife? Okay. And the missionary companion I was with at the time said, well, this, this, and this. Very few points. I knew what he was saying because he had read it that morning. He had memorized the words from that little pamphlet. But he couldn't give a heartfelt explanation. Even if he could have said, hey, you know what? I was reading in the Bible earlier, and this is what Peter or this is what Isaiah said, and this is my understanding of it. Does that help it? And he didn't even want to do that. And me being who I am, I said, Elder, I can answer that. And he goes, no, you can't, because we don't know the answer to that. I said, no offense, you don't know the answer because you haven't studied it. I know the answer because I've studied it. And I looked at this young lady and I said, this is what the Mormon culture believes. She says, well, I'm Catholic. This is what we believe. Okay. Yes, absolutely. I understand the Catholic Church. I was in France for a long time. I have an understanding. And yeah, there are a lot of similarities. And me and her had a conversation. And I kind of helped her have an understanding of the Mormon beliefs. But when we got home, that missionary was so mad. He was like, you went away from the script. You're never supposed to leave the script. We're supposed to convince them that they can believe this and they get baptized. And that's not who I am. I tell people all the time, it's like the missionaries are trying to be salesmen and they're trying to sell a product. And they can't do that. You know, they just can't do it.
So I was writing to ask you, okay, so a few points before I get on the baptism.
Yeah.
You're so spot on. I did not raise Mormon. Yeah. But I don't know if you know, when I started that Mormon group that you're in, I started it because last year, because of the pandemic, a lot of Mormons were basically go online and they wanted to talk to people, whatever. So right. A lot of them were friending me and asking about Jesus Christ, whatever. And at first I was like very offended because of one question. As you mentioned, they're so scripted and they're so rigid on the script. They're not being logical to be like, okay, I can have a script, but I can make it my own in a way for it not to be robotic. So right. One question they would ask is, hey, da 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 da, making small talk, of course, which I don't like small talk, but then they'll go right on it. And it's my pet peeve when people start to make small talk and I can tell they're not genuine. But then when they went to their question they're asking, and if I answer differently what I know they expected, then the conversation, they either ghost, flake, or they just ignore my answer and go to the next thing. And I'm like, okay, so totally not genuine. But I'm like, okay, so later on, in the beginning, I was very offended. But then later on, I was like, you know what? I'm going to play the game. So that's what it, making, I made the group, because I feel like, okay, I'm going to make a group because I've noticed certain things. And I want to create a group where if anyone wants a refuge, as I mentioned in the description, to go on there to talk about their stuff, if they're still on there to talk, to get basically to get either feedback or support from people who are not Mormons or from people who are Mormons and want the same support. And I feel like the group is like a small number, but I love it because one thing I also wanted to make sure to do, to never advertise a group, to let people find it by themselves. And I think there's like 480 people in there now, and all of them has gone on there willingly because obviously because of the description, it's a refuge to like ally or current. Basically, there's no like snitching. And when people request to join, if they are like new and I look at their profile and I'm like, they have no photos or they have limited photos or they didn't have a description, I don't let them in the group because I want to keep people who are current Mormons safe. Because I don't want any trolls to go in there to see who's on there to snitch on them. Yeah. And of course, there might be someone who's doing that and I don't know, but I do my best to like, basically anyone who's request to do my best to like, we let them join in if I think they're not a troll, whatever. And it seems like most people on there, they want support and they're just hanging out or just watching. And some people I've noticed are preaching, which is fine by me because some people on there are reporting the people that are preaching and I leave them there because I'm like, no, this is a safe space for even those people who are preaching because if you don't like it, just don't look. I don't like canceling people or censoring people unless those preaching people are saying, hey, you evil, then I would kick them out. But right. If they're not doing that, they just preaching and that's fine. And so I did notice when you're talking about the robotic and the pamphlet thing, which is like so annoying because I don't like people who are not genuine. I've also started studying with Mormons because they kept going on my DM. And so I was just like, okay, I'm going to play that game. So I went to study with a group first and I was just like, okay, they suck. So I let them go. And there's another group that a group of three, and one of them, he kept calling me brother and he kept calling me my friend. And I feel like he's more genuine than any of them because, as I mentioned, if you say something they don't like or they don't get their way, they just ghost you or flake. And a lot of them has done that. And that one kid, he's done with his mission now. And I don't know if he's watching this or not because now he's excited because he knew about my podcast. He's like, oh, I can't wait to get home to watch YouTube because apparently he's not allowed to go on YouTube while he was on a mission. So I don't know if he's watching my stuff or not. But yeah, and I even asked him to be on my podcast and he said he could not. But I felt like it was real online friendship at least because I felt like he was genuine. He's not being a robot and he was accepting, etc. Because I even told him, I was just like, are you allowed to be my friend because I'm part of the LGBT and I'm not Mormon? And then he's like, no, you're cool. I don't judge. I accept everybody. And he's so family oriented. He often saying, I want my family to meet you. I want my family to. And I'm like, oh, that's so nice of him. He's like, so cool. And all the other ones want to baptize me. And I found these guys, I think, where are they? In Jersey or somewhere. No, they're in Upper Manhattan. And so they started giving me lessons and they're so good. And when I ask questions, they find answers, even if it's not on the spot, on the next time. And what I loved about him, exactly what you said, they are genuine. Of course, I noticed they're talking on the pamphlet, but they are telling me more than what's on the pamphlet. And their time with me usually, because I think they only had to do 30 minutes. Sometimes it's 45 to an hour because it's so juicy and so real. And I loved it. And unfortunately, three times they had to let me go because I'm in Brooklyn and they couldn't study. They said, you need to study somewhere with Brooklyn because you need to start going to church in Brooklyn. And I was doing that as an experiment. And yeah. I'm still but then I was just like, okay, I didn't tell them, of course, but I didn't want to go to the church because I didn't want to be peer pressured or being called out on my experiment, whatever. And so eventually they're done studying with me, but then they wanted me to be baptized. And I've noticed to play their game. And I was like, oh yeah, sure, I'll be baptized. And I'm interested because I wanted to learn without bias, with open mind, because I didn't, the only thing I've known about the Mormon church was from online, from non-Mormons or people who left who are either telling the truth or bad-mouthing. And I've learned enough of those, but I wanted to learn from the Mormons and themselves and ask some safe questions, but not hard questions enough for them to be like, okay, let me go to this guy. Because I've made that mistake before. I asked a question and then it totally ghosts me because they're like, okay, this guy's not the guy. Because they want someone who's a robot, brain dead, or a zombie or a dummy.
Mm-hmm.
And so later on, I played that so I could learn more. And then they headed me off to two or three guys, because sometimes they come in pairs of three or in two of two. Mm-hmm. And then they came over to my house like three times, I think, and they did studies with me. And then I told them, I'm done with the studies, whatever. And then they're like, okay, start coming to church. Can we do like a 2-week or 3-week baptism? And I'm like, why are you so set on baptism? Like, what is that? And then they went to the chastity, like laws of whatever things. And you know why I didn't actually quit? Maybe a month ago, I don't remember. Not in December, definitely in November. I stopped going because I wanted to learn more. And I would not mind, if they're watching this, sorry. I would not mind, yeah, I would not mind being getting the baptism just to learn more. Because I have the time, I could play the game. But I know once you get baptized, they record you, they take all your information and all this stuff. Because I've watched baptism too. I went to the church and I watched it. And then you need to give 10% of your earnings. And I told them, it's pandemic, I'm not working. And even some jobs here and there I do, because I'm entrepreneur and I do gigs. I wanted to pay my rent and my credit card, and I'm going to send it to some effing church.
Right.
Because first of all, I'm doing it as experiment. So I want it to be as free as possible. Mm-hmm. And so when they can pressure me for baptism, after a Sunday, I wrote them a text and I said, thank you for the opportunity. I love hanging out with you. You guys are awesome, whatever, whatever. But I'm totally not interested anymore. Right. And then he messaged me. And they're so delayed on the message unless, I don't know if you noticed that once they need something from me, if I don't text them back within 30 minutes or the hour, they text me again the same question or like, question mark, calling me. But then when it's my turn, they take days. And I'm like, okay, really interesting. So when I said I'm not interested, he was like right on it. He's like, okay, I'm curious then why. And then they sent me a list, like pre-baptism list thing. Ooh. You know, those with the questions and whatever, do you believe? And then he asked me that when they came to my house. And then I told them I couldn't answer a lot of the question because like, do you believe in Joseph Smith? And I said, I've only been studying for 6 weeks, or maybe let's just say 2 months. And you guys have not talked about, I don't know anything about the church. So how can I truffully say I believe in those things? How can I truthfully say I believe in the president when I didn't even know who a president was until you told me right then and there? Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned with the script, they were like deer in a headlight. And I was just like, you guys are not genuine. Like, you're not doing it from your heart. Like, but I didn't tell them that because you know what I understand? I was not an adult. My brain was not adult developed until I was 25 years old, or maybe 26.
Same here.
Yeah. And it's, and that I've noticed that as a human being, but it's also scientific. This is why, if you know or not, when you go to school, once you have passed the age of 25, your parents cannot claim you legally anymore.
Right.
And it's also scientific that you're not, your brain is not fully developed as an adult until you're 25. And of course, women and men is different. And I read a thing and I totally feel it because I'm in my, I've gone to my 40s, that a man is not, you know, when they call it middle age, you're not fully a man where you like taking your life seriously. Of course, it's not for everybody, but for that study, like majority of the population, you're not fully a man where you're going to take your, you get your shit together and get your eggs in a row until you're 40. Because when you're that middle age, that's when you're like, okay, do I have savings? Where's my family at? Where? Why do I still have roommates? Why don't I have my own house or car or a career and this and that? Because you start thinking about death, which makes sense at 40. And so anyway, so I wrote them. I was like, I won't do it anymore or whatever. But I have a good run. I went to the church. I experienced it and all this stuff. And I, and every time after church, they ask me for my opinion. And I tell them, I have no opinion. I call it, when I do anything nowadays, of course, I do my best to experience it 100% without bias. Because if I enter any space with bias, what's the point of learning? Because you're not learning. You're just questioning and being combative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my experience with them. And I don't go to church anymore. But one thing I still do every Thursday that they got me into is volunteering at the food shelter.
Okay.
And I look forward to that every Thursday. I love doing it. And sometimes I see them. When I see them, it got awkward because they're making small talk. And I told anybody that wants to be in my life, and I told them, one way to really grind my gear, if you're making small talk and I feel like you're not genuine.
Yes.
Then I'll feel like I don't want to do anything with you because I'm like, you're just being a robot and awkward. And I'm like, I understand if you've been awkward, but if you've been awkward, just don't.
Right.
And I'm an open person. You don't need to be awkward. And I understand, like, if you've been awkward, that's your end. But, like, I'm not judging you. And yeah, and I feel like there is this hold back with them. And I get it. They're 18, they're 20, 21, whatever the age is. And I was there too. And even when, as an adult, I was playing the mask game of corporate, like, whatever. I wear a mask and I'm being, like, not genuine with work, you know? So I cannot and I will not ask the world from them. So I get it.